Good afternoon. I'm going to go ahead and get started. Last session of the day, and who'd have believed it? Microsoft Conference, we're talking about Linux and Unix. So, waving a hat back there. I was talking to a group of press and analysts a couple of weeks ago, and one of the guys said, you know, 10 years ago I would have thought this was an April Fool's joke, but this is real. Running and managing Linux and Unix, and of course the rest of the title is with Hyper-V and in System Center. So essentially, I'm going to talk about running Linux and Unix in the Microsoft private cloud. I'm going to talk a little bit about the strategy. Why is Microsoft doing this? What are we trying to accomplish? We'll delve in a little bit to the Linux integration services that let you run Linux on Hyper-V. And then we'll spend most of the time talking about System Center, how System Center can manage Linux and Unix. And we'll touch on four of the components of System Center and their ability to manage and run Linux and Unix. And we'll do some demos along the way. Top level, what's the strategy here? What's the broad goals? Microsoft's been doing systems management for quite a while now. We want to sell into the enterprise. We want to sell into hosters. And the reality is, sure, Windows Server has a big market share. But companies have Linux, they have Unix, they want to run those, and they want to run one private cloud, they want to run one systems management infrastructure. And so we have built the Linux and Unix capabilities to be an integral part of the product line, to be production ready for real customers. We've actually been doing this for about 4 or 5 years now, that the product capability initially with Ops Manager has been in the field. And the data we have says probably about 25% of the System Center Ops Manager installations are actually managing Linux and Unix right alongside their Windows systems. So this is real. This is not a few percentage points somewhere in a corner. We want to be competitive in the Unix-Linux marketplace. There are other products out there, but we're going to compete as that heterogeneous cloud OS so that the cloud OS runs Windows, the cloud OS can also run Linux, and you can manage your Unix systems with that as well. And we want to bring the Microsoft simplicity and price performance. You don't need an army of consultants to come in and set this up to be able to manage your Linux and Unix systems. Just quick question for the audience here. How many of you guys, is this sort of your first exposure to Microsoft and System Center doing Linux and Unix, sort of your first investigation? So pretty good, maybe half of the crowd here. So this presentation is going to be a broad overview. It's a 200-level presentation. I'm going to plow through a number of different topics and give you a sense of where the Linux and Unix capabilities plug in to the Microsoft private cloud, if you will. The focus is on server workloads. Sure, you could talk about Linux desktops. You could talk about Unix workstations. Our focus has been on servers, be they traditional physical servers, just managing the physical hardware, be it virtualized systems where you've got multiple guests running on a piece of physical hardware, and then, of course, moving to the private cloud where you've actually got that ability to, that flexibility to move things around among different hypervisors, to do self-service, to do chargeback. And then, of course, going to the public cloud. I'm not going to speak much about Azure today, but, of course, we're offering Linux capabilities there right alongside the Windows capabilities. To drill down, you know, what are we supporting in terms of Linux and Unix? There are six different Linux distros that we are officially supporting. These are server-focused Linux distros. You don't see Slackware up there. We're not really going after the hobbyist or the experimenter. These are the ones that we hear from our enterprise customers, enterprise hosters, that they want to be running. And you can see the support across Operations Manager, Config Manager, Endpoint Protection, which is the antivirus capability on Linux. Virtual Machine Manager and Hyper-V, of course, making up the core of the private cloud. And then, of course, Azure IaaS, being able to run Linux VMs in the public cloud. On the Unix side, support for the proprietary AIX, HPUX, and Solaris, and that simply in the Operations Manager and the Configuration Manager space. And in fact, if you go back to this slide, you see the Unixes on traditional and virtualized environments. We're not seeing AIX in the cloud at this point. So if somebody else, if you hear about that happening, I'd love to know, but we're not there at this point. And so no plans really to take the Unix operating systems into that full private cloud environment. Let me talk about the Linux integration services for a couple of slides here. This is what allows you to run Linux on Hyper-V, right alongside Windows. Linux guests have use of the same facilities that Hyper-V has, provides for Windows guests. the demos this morning about the faster live migration. Works for Linux guests just like it works for Windows guests. Network virtualization that's been talked about as a key thing that came in Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V. That works for Linux guests just like it does for Windows guests. And we also want to be competitive with the functionality and performance of the other hypervisors that are out there, KVM, VMware ESX, Citrix, etc. There's a bunch of development work that we're doing in the Linux kernel. We're writing device drivers for Hyper-V to support the VM bus protocol within Hyper-V. Dynamic memory is probably the key thing that customers have been asking for, to allow Hyper-V to move physical memory in and out of Linux guests just like it does Windows guests. This really allows you to increase the density of Linux VMs that you can get on Hyper-V. New 2D synthetic video driver. We've been emulating video up until this point and caused some problems with a mouse cursor. Now, of course, that's not really a server scenario, but customers will run video from time to time, and we want to have great performance there. Dynamic resize of VHD, something that's new in Windows Server 2012 R2 Hyper-V. We also have that capability on the Linux side. You resize the VHD, we'll automatically figure that out within the Linux OS. The file system will grow, and all of a sudden you'll have much more space in your file system. So we're doing a bunch of this Linux kernel development work. It is essentially asynchronous. So even though we're talking about some of these things in the context of 2012 R2, we're really doing that development work independent of the development cycle, the release cycles on the Windows side of the world. And so let me talk about that a little bit. If you've done any work with Linux on Hyper-V up until now, over the past 3 or 4 years, what we've done, of course, is we developed the Linux integration services for Hyper-V, and we put them up on the Microsoft Download Center. Customer goes and installs some hardware, they install Hyper-V, they install a Linux operating system into a guest VM, and then they've got to go download Linux integration services from Microsoft and install it into their Linux VM. And that's what we've done for the past 3 or 4 years during the early phases of this project. About a year ago, we got clearance, we got the okay to put the Linux integration services directly into the Linux main kernel. And so as we do development work now, it goes into the Linux community, we get comments back from the Linux community, we make changes, we iterate, and then those changes go into the Linux kernel. And the distro vendors, the Red Hats of the world, the SUSEs, anybody, frankly, who wants to, I think I've recently heard that the Mint Linux distribution has picked up our drivers. And you get your Linux distribution that has the drivers built in, you put that Linux distribution on Hyper-V, and it just works. You don't have to download anything from Microsoft, and if you're doing a supported Linux distro from Red Hat, from SUSE, all of your support stuff's intact because you haven't monkeyed around with the kernel by adding in this stuff from Microsoft. So the capabilities just come directly built into the Linux kernel. And then support issues can flow in the reverse direction. So if you've got a Red Hat distro running on Hyper-V and you have an issue, you can contact Red Hat support. That's what you paid for, and they'll be happy to help you with that problem. And if it does turn out to be something specific on Hyper-V, they'll go back to the community. That means us from the Microsoft standpoint on Hyper-V, and we'll deal with those issues. So we've been in a transition from that old model to the new model here. And just in terms of where we stand, as of the Red Hat 5.9 and 6.4 releases, which have come out in the last couple of months here, those now have the Linux integration services built in. SLES 11 SP2 has it built in. The Ubuntu server has it built in all the way back to the 12.04 version. The new Debian release that just came out a couple of weeks ago has Linux integration services built in. So we expect to see this list really begin to grow as distro vendors pick up these Linux integration services. And then that means the support strategy means can go back to your Linux vendor. Sure, you can call Microsoft. You got an issue. You got a big EA agreement, Premier, whatever. We're not going to turn you away. But we feel like that the best path is going to be to go back to your Linux distro vendor to get that support. So that's the quick summary of where we stand on LIS. We're going to keep adding things. We just recently got the virtual fiber channel driver done and into the Linux kernel. And so we'll start to see these capabilities show up in additional Linux distros that'll be coming out. The first one we're going to see most of these new capabilities in is the SLES 11 SP3. We'll expect to see a Red Hat update later this year. There'll be an Ubuntu 13.10. So as those Linux distros pick up these changes in the coming month, you'll be able to pair these distros with Windows Server 2012, R2, Hyper-V, and really be off to the races in terms of running Linux on Hyper-V. So let me turn now and talk more about System Center for the rest of the session here. Again, I mentioned that we shipped the Ops Manager capability for Linux and Unix really back in 2009. We've been broadening our Linux and Unix capabilities across System Center for quite some time now. We can manage JEE app servers in Ops Manager. We've got Linux Unix capabilities now in Config Manager. We've got the endpoint protection, the antivirus now. We've got Linux support in Virtual Machine Manager for the private cloud. And in the R2 release, the 2012 R2 release, we will have DPM support for backing up Linux VMs. And I'll describe that in a little more detail here. So this has been a project over a number of years here. Our emphasis is we feel like we've got the broad coverage now within System Center. We feel like that you can do Linux in the private cloud, particularly as of the SP1 release and the new R2 release, that we've got that breadth, we've got that capability. And now I'll delve into more details here as we go along. To summarize the functionality, and I'm going to touch on these, the big three, if you will, Virtual Machine Manager, the ability to manage Linux in the private cloud, personalizing OS instances. This is the key thing. On the Windows side, you can sysprep a Windows image, you can put that into a VM template, and then you can create 10 VMs from that template, right? And each VM will get a unique host name, a unique IP addresses. All of that will happen for you automatically as part of the sysprep mechanism in Windows. We've implemented that same capability now for Linux when you're deploying it in VMM. So you can do templates, you can deploy multiple OS instances from that template, and that OS personalization will happen for you automatically. Once you've got that capability, you can then do service templates, multi-tier deployments out of Virtual Machine Manager, and you can scale out those service templates just like you can on the Windows side. And then live migration, other things that I mentioned earlier, all of that, the Virtual Machine Manager, Hyper-V support, that just accrues to your Linux VMs just like your Windows VMs. Config Manager side, hardware inventory, inventory of installed applications, just like you would for a Windows machine. Then you can create collections, you can do software distribution to push out packages to those Linux and Unix machines, you can run reports on that inventory, and you can do the endpoint protection. And we'll delve into that in more detail as well. And then, of course, finally, on the Ops Manager side, monitoring. Are those servers up and running? Have I run out of disk space? Is my CPU overloaded? Monitoring the OS health, monitoring the performance. Monitoring the log files. Do I have error events happening? Monitoring those line of business applications. Monitor your Oracle database, your DB2 database. Audit the security events. So we'll delve into those details as well. So the System Center product line brings in those Linux and Unix capabilities across the board to all the different product set now. So let's delve into more detail in Virtual Machine Manager. As I mentioned, manage those Linux VMs right alongside the Windows VMs. We have integrated Linux into the user interface. It's integrated into the PowerShell commandlet. So whether you're doing it through the UI or whether you're doing automation with PowerShell to do scripting, those Linux capabilities are there. And there's really very little we had to change. I'll show you that in a minute. I mentioned deploying Linux from a VM template with the automated specialization and then being part of a service template. So the OS specialization works as follows. You have a VHD image, VHDX, that you've got your Linux operating system installed into. There is a VMM agent. So Linux itself doesn't have sysprep. The way we've implemented the personalization is with an agent, and that needs to be in that image. That agent comes along with VMM. The hardware profile is pretty much the same. There's actually no change. Same virtual hardware, same ability to configure MAC addresses, same ability to do DHCP or have VMM manage the IP address pools, all those settings. All of that works the same for Linux as it does for Windows. The only difference is in the OS profile. The OS is a little different. You don't need a Microsoft product key to run Linux. You don't need to configure roles and features like you do on Windows. But you can specify the host name. We let you specify the root password. We let you specify an SSH key because that's a very standard way to get into a deployed Linux virtual machine. And so you can specify that. Time zone. And then we've implemented run once command lines. So on the Windows side, as part of the sysprep, the unattended XML file, you can specify GUI run once commands. These are command lines that'll get executed the first time somebody logs in. What we've done on the Linux side is implemented the equivalent kind of capability, except that they won't happen with the GUI, they happen as part of the OS deployment. And these command lines can be anything. You can go mount an NFS file system, go install some additional applications. This allows you to take the personalization of that virtual machine beyond just what came in the OS image and what's directly supported within VMM. And so you can do any kind of arbitrary shell command lines here. We'll show you an example of that here in a minute. So let me click over to a demo. And I'm going to have to log back into my computer because it has timed out. All right, flip to the demo. So this is Virtual Machine Manager, standard user interface. And if we look into the virtual machine, you can see we've got some VMs running. Some of these are Windows. Some of these are Linux. Based on the name that you see here, there's a Windows Server 2012 down here, all running on the same Hyper-V host. If I go to the VMM library, you're probably familiar with VM templates. And I've got a template defined here for a SUSE. And let's take a look at that template. This has already been created. If you look at the hardware configuration, you'll see this is exactly the same. Same kind of ability to specify the processor, the memory, the disks, the network adapters, as you would have on the Windows side. Nothing new there. When we go to the OS configuration, this is where you'll see the SLES operating system is specified. We have a bunch of the different Linux and Linux versions listed here. Identity information, you get to specify the host name. Just like you can on the Windows side, you can put wildcards in there. So we'll fill in that pound, pound, pound with a numeric suffix so that the created virtual machines have a unique name. Root credentials. So again, rather than an admin password. And you can specify the password here, or we can pull the password out of a run-as account that's in Virtual Machine Manager. Time zone, pretty much the same as it would be on the Windows side. And here's those run-once commands. You can see that I'm going to do a makedir. I'm going to do a mount of an NFS file system. And I've got some command lines here that are going to go off. And the third one here is going to install the config manager agent. The fourth one here is going to install MySQL. The fifth one here is going to install Apache. So we're going to execute those Linux command lines just in sequence to do additional customization of that virtual machine. So if I click out of Virtual Machine Manager, let me go into App Controller for a minute. This is the self-service user interface that was originally shipped as part of the 2012 SP1 release. There's also the new CATAL, I guess it's now called Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. I think that was the name that was announced today. I have to practice remembering that. But anyway, I could do through that user interface. I could do a deployment against VMM. I'm going to show doing a deployment here using the App Controller user interface. I can select a template. There's that template that we saw earlier. The quotas come into play here. For demo purposes, I'm not going to have any quotas, so I'm going to select that template. I'm going to configure this virtual machine by giving it a name, TechEd Demo VM. I'm going to click OK, and I'm going to click Deploy. And that's very simply going to go off and start deploying a Linux VM from that template that we looked about earlier, and it will get created and be running on Hyper-V. And in fact, if we come back here to our VMs and services and look at what's running in the Contoso cloud, you'll see that the status of that VM is that it's being created. And so nothing new here. This works just like it does on the Windows side, but it now works for Linux VMs. Now let's take a look at the next step, and we'll go to a service template. So I've got a service template here called Dinner Now Accounting. Let's open that in the Service Template Designer. And again, this is the standard service template layout that you would have for a Windows application. I've got two tiers. Both of these tiers are running the SUSE Linux operating system. Interestingly enough, this is going to be the database tier, and the name there has that @dbhost@syntax, which, as you know, is a service service variable that can get specified at the time that you do the deployment. And so that'll be the name of that host. And what's interesting is if we look at the properties of this other, the web tier, and if we go to the OS configuration and we look at the run once commands that we've set up there, again, you see that same set that I had in the other one. What I've done a little bit differently here is I'm installing Dinner Now. This is that particular web application. And I'm using that @dbhost@variable, service template variable here, so that I can create that linkage between the web tier and the database. So if I go deploy this template, I'll specify that host name, and I can make sure that the web tier knows what the host name is to talk to the database tier. And so we are doing that variable substitution, if you will, into those run once command lines so that you get that flexibility. So that's the key point that I wanted to point out there. So let's go ahead and configure this deployment. My dinner now, we'll give it a name. And you'll notice it'll prompt me over here for what I'm going to put in to that variable. Let's call it LMXDB 112, just to make up a name here. We'll refresh that preview. We'll make sure that that's going to get placed properly. Everything looks good there, and we will deploy that service. So we're going to end up with one machine that's named LNXWeb-002, and we're going to end up with another machine that's called LNXDB-1112 because that's what we supplied for the variable there. So I'm going to click Deploy That Service, and that deployment will be happening now. And again, if we go back to our VMs and services and look in the Contoso Cloud, you'll see that we're creating those other two VMs, and that first one that I created is about getting completed here. So I'm going to let that run in the background here. We're going to shift back to the PowerPoint. And while that's running, we'll take a look at some additional details here. How does this OS specialization thing actually work in VMM? You've got your Hyper-V host with the VMM host agent. You've got your VMM server. The agent files live on the VMM server, so we've got our different Linux agent files there. And then we've got a VHD that's got Linux in it sitting on the library server. The VMM server is going to generate a Linux specialization doc. So just like on the Windows side, VMM would generate your unattend.xml file. We're going to generate an internal format file that we can understand in order to do the Linux specialization. The VMM server is going to create an ISO file that contains that specialization doc. It's also going to pick up the latest copy of those agent files and push that over to the Hyper-V host as well as part of that ISO. Then the Hyper-V host is actually going to create a virtual machine. It's going to bring down the VHD that has the Linux OS in it. It's going to create that virtual machine. It's going to attach that VHD file to the virtual machine. And it's going to mount that ISO file into the virtual DVD drive. Then it's going to start that VM. Linux is going to boot up. It's going to do its normal Linux boot up stuff. And then once Linux is up and running, that's when the Linux guest agent that had to be in that VHD is going to get control. And he's going to look for the ISO that's mounted in the DVD file. First thing he's going to do is see if he needs to upgrade himself. So he's going to check the agent version, and if he needs to, he's going to install a new version of himself just so that we stay up to date in case your VHD has been sitting around for a while. And finally, once he's upgraded himself, he'll pull off that XML file that was created over in step one, and he'll do the specialization. He'll set the host name, he'll set the network information, and he'll actually go do that in the appropriate files on that Linux distro. The agent's smart enough to know I'm on Red Hat, and I have to set the networking stuff here, which is different than if I'm on Ubuntu. And so he'll do the right thing so that if that VM should reboot in the future, it'll always come back with the correct network information and the correct host name. And finally, I don't have it on the slide here, but that little guest agent actually uninstalls and deletes himself so that once that VM is up and running, you don't have anything left. There's no ongoing agent overhead in that Linux VM. So at that point, you're in a pure Linux VM, nothing funky, and we've set all the appropriate specialization for you. So live migration and placement works. If you've got host-based pro tips, that stuff works. I mentioned scale out of Linux roles and services. You can go into VMM, change your scale out from a 3 to a 5. VMM will spin up two more Linux VMs, for example. All of the IP address management works. The storage management for VHD, VHDX files works. All of the clustered shared volumes, all the clustering, the failover, ODX, all of those capabilities work for Linux VMs, just like on Windows VMs. And then, of course, you can script all of this using the PowerShell commandlets, just like you can on the Windows side. So, fully integrated, you've got the UI. The only screen that changed in the UI was that OS specialization screen. PowerShell commandlets tweaked a little bit, but other than that, what you know on VMM on the Windows side works for the Linux side. Continuing on with the kind of the quick run through everything that we've got here, let's talk about Configuration Manager. We've added a bunch of capabilities for Linux and Unix servers. Config Manager's been around a long time, 15 plus years. It's got a lot of features. It's got some features that are very desktop, laptop, client-focused. It's got features that are server-focused. And so we've tried to implement the key things that are relevant for servers in your data center. So hardware inventory, inventory of installed software. Now, on a Windows machine, install software gets you basically the add remove programs list, right? Dump out the MSI database. On the Linux box, Red Hat, we're going to dump out the RPM database for you. On your AIX box, we'll dump out the LPP database. So we'll tell you what the native packages are that are installed on that particular operating system. Software deployment. We've implemented classic software distribution. The new application model that's in Config Manager 2012 is user-centric, right? That's all about targeting apps at users. We're doing server scenarios here. There's not a user logged into the box. And so we've implemented the classic packages and programs for classic software distribution out of Config Manager. Secure and authenticated communication, so we can do the HTTP, the HTTPS mode. We do have secure communication between what's running out on your Linux, Unix machine and the Config Manager infrastructure. All the reporting in Config Manager just works for Linux and Unix boxes as well. So what have we not implemented? We've not implemented internet-based client management. I really haven't seen too many people hauling the server around to Starbucks wanting to do that kind of thing like they would their laptop. User-centric software installation, mentioned that. We didn't do that. There's a couple of things that we are server-focused that we have not done. Desired configuration management, settings management, if it's also known now. That's something we'd like to implement. We definitely get customer feedback that that's needed on Linux and Unix computers, so just didn't make it into this release. OS deployment onto physical hardware, task sequencing, WinPE, all of that stuff on the Windows side, not really makes a lot of sense to try to move that over to the Linux or the Unix world. So we've not implemented that. Fairly low on our priority list at this point. So this gives you a feel for what you can do with Linux and Unix servers, and we'll give us some demos here in a little bit. What do we actually implement here? The Config Manager server roles unchanged. We added a couple of Linux and Unix operating systems into the supported platforms list, but other than that, the Config Manager server doesn't really know that he's talking to a Linux or a Unix box. So we've implemented an agent, a client, a Config Manager client that runs out on Linux and Unix, the equivalent of CCM exec. And just so anybody who's really used to Config Manager doesn't get confused, that they don't get homesick, we actually named it CCM exec, running on Linux and Unix. Kept the same name there. Now, the communication that it has with the Config Manager server roles works just like it does on Windows. The agent makes a request to the management point, the MP, or the DP, gets a response back. That communication is exactly the same. No new protocols, nothing new happening there. Out on the Linux and Unix box, the Windows agent, the Config Manager client on Windows, has a lot of dependencies on WMI. And so we've implemented a WMI equivalent called OMI, the Open Management Infrastructure. And this is an open source project. I'll chat about that here in just a second. There are providers that plug into that, and we've implemented providers to get your hardware inventory information, to dump out the RPM database and provide that information. These providers are built on top of what we call the PAL, the platform abstraction layer. This is where we try to hide all the differences in the different Linux distros, the different Unix versions, and make the higher levels not really tied to whether it's AIX versus Linux, Solaris versus Linux. And then, of course, the PAL talks to the actual operating system resources. And we're going in at the system call level. We're making ioctls. We are talking to /proc. We're not running Linux or Unix commands to get the info and then trying to parse the textual output. We're actually making those system calls into the OS to get the raw data that we need there. So hardware inventory, just like on the Windows side, you can view the inventory for a single machine. You can bring up Resource Explorer. We're using the same database tables that the Windows side uses. So physical memory size on a Linux box goes into the same database table as physical memory on a Windows box. So you bring up Resource Explorer, and you can see that inventory information for a single machine just like you would for a Windows machine. We did get the Config Manager guys to make one change. The icon that they were using for the operating system info was actually the Windows icon. And so we got them to change that to a slightly more generic icon. View as you install software, talked about that. So then you can create collections. You've got inventory information. You want a collection that's all the machines with 8 gigs of memory or more. If you create that collection definition in Config Manager, that collection will contain Windows machines, Linux machines, AIX machines, etc. So you can end up with a mixture there. But you can also form operating system specific collections by using the operating system name in the collection query and then, say, filter yourself to just SLES machines, AIX machines, or whatever. And then, of course, inventory information feeds into reports. So if you want to get a report of all the machines with more than 8 gig of memory, you can run a report and get that kind of information. The implementation, the SIM server, plays the role of WMI. It is an open source project. It's at omi.opengroup.org. There's other talks happening here at TechEd about the data center abstraction layer and the new role that OMI will play in implementing the data center abstraction layer. And so we're getting System Center into alignment with that, that new strategic push for the DAO in order to make use of OMI here. And so we've implemented Linux classes and properties. Config Manager has some UI for enabling and disabling individual classes in hardware inventory. That UI works for Linux and Unix machines. So if you go into that UI and you disable the Win32 BIOS class, we didn't actually implement a class named Win32 BIOS on our Linux machine. Really tried to get the Win32s out of the Linux machines and Unix machines. But we've done a name mapping. So if you do that UI work with Win32 BIOS, we'll do the right thing on the Linux machine or on your Unix machine to enable that class or to disable that class. We support Delta inventory, just like on the Windows side, to save bandwidth. And you can extend inventory with custom providers. So just like on the Windows side, you could implement a WMI provider to do custom inventory. Same thing on the Linux Unix side. And the specification for those providers comes out of that open group project. So rather than that being a custom interface from Microsoft, that provider interface is defined by the OMI project. And again, you're going to see OMI really get rolled into more and more things on the Microsoft side, including on the Windows side, as we go forward here. WMI V2, if you will, uses that same OMI interface. And so we're standardizing on that interface going forward. Software deployment. So you can push out a package, you can run a command line, i.e. the program, packages and programs concept here. And because of that, just like on the Windows side, you can do anything you really want to. You can deploy apps, you can deploy patches and updates, you can deploy OS patches, you can run arbitrary maintenance scripts. You can also run, just like you could, you know, on the Windows side, you know, do del *** and delete everything from the file system. You can run rm-rf* here on your Linux and Unix boxes and delete everything. So the same kind of power that you have for arbitrary command lines here, you have on the Linux and Unix side. So the picture looks like this. And if you're familiar with Config Manager, you'll recognize this. You've got an admin UI talking to a site server with a site database. You have a management point, which is the MP, which is the control channel, if you will. You have the DP, which is your content machine, where your distribution point. And on the Windows side, of course, you create a package. Maybe that's an MSI. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's just a set of files. You create a program, which is a script. Could be a BAT file. You do an advertisement. The MP gets that information. Windows machines pull down the policy from the MP. They pull down the content from the distribution point. The software distribution, the actual install, will happen as defined by the maintenance window, and you send back a status message so that if you've hit 50 machines, then the IT admin gets status messages back, and he knows that 48 succeeded and one failed, and we didn't hear from one of them. So he can go investigate those two that had problems. So that's what happens on the Windows side. The picture looks just the same for Linux and Unix. You're going to create a package. Could be an RPM, could be a PKG on Solaris, could be a tarball, could be just a collection of files with a shell script. So anything you want to is a package. Multiple directories with subdirectories, all acceptable. Program is the command line that you want to run to do the installation. Again, you do an advertisement. You target some Linux Unix machines. The Linux Unix servers, they're going to pull down the policy from the same management point. So one MP can serve both Windows machines as well as Linux and Unix machines. It's going to pull down content. So if you had an RPM or you had a directory with some files in it, it's going to pull that down from the DP. Same distribution point can serve Windows machines and Linux Unix machines. So those Linux Unix files will reside on a Windows machine that is the DP. It'll install during a maintenance window. That's super important for servers. So you can target, you can define the maintenance windows in Config Manager, target an advertisement, and the installation will wait until that maintenance window opens up. And then, of course, we'll send back a status message. Same thing as on the Windows side. So the goal here is that these additions, they dovetail with the existing console in the UI. We don't have any new UI in the Config Manager console. Existing hardware infrastructure, same MP, same DP, same site server, nothing new you have to set up there. And the same management paradigms, the way the IT admin thinks about operating on the Linux, Unix machines matches what he does with the Windows machines. So let's cut over and take a look at a demo here. And again, my Microsoft GP enforced options have timed out my laptop, but we'll go there. Let's bring up Config Manager. So here's your standard Config Manager console. We're looking at the devices node here, and you'll see what we've got under management. And I've got a whole collection of different machines here with different operating systems. This one is a Windows machine. All the rest of these, as you can see, are different flavors of Linux and Unix. So just for kicks, let's take a look at an AIX machine. And let's go into the Resource Explorer and get a look at what the hardware inventory looks like. So standard UI. I've got some disk drives here. I've got one hard disk using standard Linux terminology, a slash dev, slash hdisk. This would be AIX terminology, actually. It's SCSI. It's from IBM, et cetera. We have the appropriate information. We can look at the logical disks, a bunch of logical disks that are defined on this particular physical disk. It's the JFS2 file system. That's what's implemented by AIX. We can look at the installed applications. We've got a whole long list of LPP packages here, along with their version numbers. And we can, in fact, filter. So let's see what version of OpenSSL, which is sort of one of the key libraries on any Linux and Unix system. And so you can see this is an 098.13 as defined by IBM. We can look at the operating system information. This is running AIX 7.1. We can see the install date, the local date and time. We can see that it's a PowerPC machine, amount of swap space, amount of virtual memory that's set up, all the kind of inventory information that you would get. This machine has two processors, so we get some processor information for each of these. We can see the architecture again. We can see the clock speed at 3,000 megahertz. Other basic information. So this is the kind of hardware inventory information that you're going to get using AIX. If we take a look at a Linux box, it'll be very similar. All I'm going to show here is if we take a look at the installed applications, again, we're going to see a long list of packages, standard RPM packages that you would expect to see. We can look for OpenSSL again here. And we'll see that we've got an 098J version of OpenSSL installed. So if you want to form a collection of computers that all have 098J, you can do that using a collection query. And then you could target installing a new version of OpenSSL, for example, at that set of computers to upgrade that version to one that doesn't have a set of bugs that have been discovered, for example. You can form collections, and of course you can see some of the device collections that have been created here. I've got a collection that's based on the operating system name and caption that just, for example, gets the SLES 11 X64 machines. We've got two computers in that one. All the rest of these, we've just got one computer that we had set up from a demo standpoint. So let's take a look now at the software library. This is where packages and programs would live. I've got a couple of packages here. I've got a package in particular, which is Java, to be installed on SLES 11 X64. And before we do that, let's go take a look at my SLES machine. Let's just take a look at what packages are installed and see. So I'm dumping out the list of RPMs. I'm grepping to find just those names that have Java. I've got a font package installed, but I don't actually have Java itself. And if I try to run the command Java, it's no such file or directory. So it's not installed there. What I'm going to do is deploy this package. So I'm going to walk through the deploy wizard here. I'm going to target this package at a collection of the SLES X64 computers. The package is already on a distribution point here, so I don't have to do anything there. This is a required package. I'm going to do this as soon as possible for demo purposes. A couple of other options here. Some of these options don't actually apply to the Linux and Unix machines, but rather than try to make the UI custom or make it know the difference between a Windows and a Linux-Unix machine, we just left that UI in place. And I walked through the wizard, and I've now started a software deployment of that Java package out to those SLES 11 machines. Now, while that's going through the motions here, let's take a quick look at the properties of this package. Where's this data coming from? It's actually just sitting on the site server machine in the C colon folder. And in fact, if I bring up Windows Explorer down on C colon in Java, Java 1.6, I've actually got an RPM file sitting there. So standard Java RPM copied onto my Windows machine where it's accessible from Config Manager. So that's the package. And then the program piece of this, if I look at the properties of that program, I've actually got a command line. And this is a Java command, this is a Linux command line, right? Run the RPM command, point to the RPM package. Config Manager doesn't really know. It's a text string as far as Config Manager is concerned. So that string is going to get passed down to the Linux box to actually run that command line. So let's go look at the Linux box again. One of the things I have to do, just like on the Windows side, for demo purposes, I need to kick the agent and tell it to actually go download policy. The agent on a Linux box polls the management point by default once every hour, just like the Config Manager agent does. And so this kicks it in the pants and says, hey, go check for policy right now so that we can get on with this demo. And if we wait a while, wait around a little bit here, and I try the Java command, you'll notice I now get results back again. It's been installed. If I do the look for the packages, I now have the Java package installed. And if I go back to Config Manager and look in the monitoring section here and go to deployments, close up the reports here a minute. Here's deployments. I'll actually have a Java for SLES computers here. Now it's showing 0% compliance there because the status message has to come back, it has to be summarized and so forth. But I did one earlier today and you'll see that you get back the status. In this case, when I had targeted it at two computers, one of them successfully installed, and I get that same kind of aggregate view of the success of the deployment here in the Config Manager UI that I would for the Windows side of the world. Finally, let me just point out a couple of things. Let's do a couple of reports here. Here's a report, standard Config Manager report. In the past, this report, of course, would show you all the different versions of Windows that you had installed. Now you can see all the different versions of Linux and Unix. The names show up. The report has not changed from what it was before the Linux Unix got introduced. I can also do get a list of packages that are installed. So similar to the inventory for a single machine, I can see package information across multiple machines. And again, if I go open SSL and search through the report here, I can see that I have OpenSSL 9.8J installed on two machines. I can drill down in this report and see the names of the two machines, for example, that had that particular package installed on them. So all of that mechanism works for Config Manager, Linux and Unix on Config Manager, just like it does for Windows. All right, let's shift back to the PowerPoint here for a second. And we'll move on and talk about Operations Manager. Linux and Unix OS monitoring, core operating system health and performance. Those, of course, are the two key concepts in Operations Manager. You can see the health of the machine. Is it green? Is it red? Is there a warning state in between? And you can collect performance data. You get numeric values back from the managed machine. Those numeric values go into the database in Ops Manager. You can graph them. You can generate alerts based on threshold values. You can see the historical data over time to figure out what's been going on. Diagnostics and recovery is a feature of Config Manager. On Windows, it sends across VBScript. On Linux and Unix machines, we send across a shell command line to get more information about a failure or to change something to correct a failure, a recovery. And the standard out, standard error from your Linux and Unix machines comes back and displays in the Config Manager console. We ship management packs, of course, for all the different Linux and Unix operating systems that we can monitor. Those management packs have a number of built-in rules and monitors, all that stuff that you get just with the management pack. But if you want to do something custom that goes beyond what's in the management pack, we have some MP templates, and I'll show you a couple of those in a demo here, to create your own custom monitors, custom tasks that you want to execute. And so, again, we'll go out and run shell command lines instead of VBScript. All the reporting works for Linux and Unix computers. Audit collection services. On the Windows side, we can detect events from the event log that may be security relevant. On the Linux side, we'll monitor syslog. We'll look for things that would be security relevant. Those somebody tried to SU to root, didn't know the password, we'll collect that information, send that back into the audit security stream right along with those Windows events so that you get an overall view of what's going on in your data center. And then, of course, managing the agents that are installed on Linux and Unix through the UI and, again, through PowerShell so that you can automate that process. Architectural overview. You have an Ops Manager management server. That's your Windows machine. You've got your managed Linux and Unix computer. That agent that's out there on that Linux and Unix computer is, historically, in the past, it was based on the Open Pegasus SIM server. And then there were providers that Microsoft implemented, again, to go get that raw data out of that Linux or Unix kernel. One of the things that's changed in this R2 release that was announced today is we're changing from Open Pegasus as the basis for that agent to using OMI. So that brings Ops Manager and Config Manager into alignment around OMI, and again, aligns us further with that data center abstraction layer concept. And so we have taken the providers that were previously implemented for Open Pegasus and rehosted those providers into OMI. The rest of the architecture here, we use SSH to do agent maintenance functions. So if you need to install the agent, need to upgrade the agent, need to restart the agent, uninstall the agent, you can do that from the Ops Manager console, and that'll happen over SSH. If SSH is a bad word in your organization, you don't trust the security, you don't have to use it. You can do those agent maintenance functions using some other tool, whatever you want to use, manually install the agent if it's necessary from a security standpoint. The ongoing monitoring, the minute-by-minute monitoring of what's going on, happens over WSMAN. The Ops Manager management server makes requests to the agent, port 1270, and the agent returns the raw data. Now, a key difference here versus monitoring, Ops Manager monitoring of a Windows machine is all of the smarts, all of the processing of the data that comes from a Linux Unix machine is actually handled on the management server. There's no health service on a Linux or Unix computer. And so the raw data comes back over WSMAN, and then the health service looks at that raw data and says, yep, this value is over the threshold. I need to generate an alert. That happens on the management server rather than on the Linux-Unix machine. So that means the agent that's on that Linux-Unix machine is very lightweight. And if your Linux and Unix gurus are concerned about what's the source code, what are those guys doing to my Linux-Unix machine, that source code's available to you. OMI is open source. The providers that we've written, that source code's also available. So we're trying to make it very comfortable for the Linux-Unix guru, or more comfortable to be running some software from Microsoft out on your Linux and Unix machine. When we do this transition to OMI, just a little bit of an update as to what's going to happen. When you upgrade to the R2 version, we're going to remove the Open Pegasus installation. It was put there by Ops Manager in the first place. And we're going to install OMI. So that's going to be a seamless upgrade for you. The settings that you may have put there, any customization, will maintain that across the transition from Open Pegasus to OMI. The thing we'll have to watch out for is partner organizations that may have created providers, management packs that have providers that plugged into Open Pegasus. And so we're going to be working with those partners to make sure that those providers also get upgraded to work with OMI instead of Open Pegasus. There is no backward compatibility. So if you've got an Open Pegasus provider, it's not going to run in OMI until you do some tweaking of that provider to make it match the OMI interface. So we're working with those vendors, third-party vendors that have management packs. If you've done any customization work here, this is something to watch out for as you go to the R2 release. The built-in monitoring from the management packs that Microsoft provides, sorry, that's in white, not very visible there. touches on CPU performance. And we've tried to model this after the same monitoring that we do on the Windows side, but then tweak it to be specific for the OS. So, you know, Linux has this concept of deferred procedure calls, and you can actually get CPU utilization done by DPCs. So we report that information right alongside sort of your standard user space and kernel space information. Memory, we report swap space as well as physical memory usage. Disks, we report physical disks. We report file systems. We report inode counts so that you, you know, what percentage of your inodes are used up, a very Linux-specific concept typically. Network utilization, monitor processes. So we monitor cron-D and syslog-D, UDEV, all of the standard Linux processes that are part of the operating system. And then, of course, monitoring log files for relevant events. So all of that comes built into the management packs that you get from Microsoft. But then you can do custom log file monitoring. So we give you some UI to specify the path name to a log file, specify a regular expression. You can monitor the log file from an application and look for the word error or other kinds of appropriate syntax. Monitor services if there are particular processes for an application that you're running on your servers. And you want to see if that, make sure that that process stays up and running, generate an alert if it disappears, or if the number of processes disappear goes below a process count. You can, again, very easily click through the UI and create a custom monitor there. And then, of course, the escape hatch for anything else that you want to do is that ability to run arbitrary command lines so that you can go create a health monitor or a performance rule from an arbitrary shell command line. And I'll do a demo here and show how that works. But shell is very powerful. Linux administrators are very accustomed to creating shell scripts that do things that return information about the health or return performance values that they're interested in. This makes it super easy to get those scripts incorporated into Ops Manager so that you can more centrally monitor what's going on. I'll show that here in a demo. Finally, there's extensibility via partners as well. So I mentioned, of course, earlier the changes that we're making to OMI. But there's a huge catalog of management packs, and there are partners who produce management packs to run on Linux and Unix to manage Oracle databases, DB2 databases, to monitor Apache HTTP server. You can see other things here. There's a company that makes management packs for monitoring AS400s and even ZOS, and, of course, Veeam for managing VMware ESX. So a number of different management pack vendors are available to take you beyond just what Microsoft provides for Linux and Unix and into the applications and into other operating systems that go beyond that. I want to mention the JEE application servers. This is a particular application that's often running on a Linux or a Unix operating system. Microsoft is providing management packs out of the box. I say out of the box, it's a download from the download center, to monitor Tomcat, JBoss, WebSphere, and WebLogic. And we monitor the basic health. Is the app server up and running? We monitor the standard Java statistics around garbage collection, performance information, memory usage, what modules are deployed, what ear files, WAR files are deployed. And we can actually tell you whether those applications are up and running based on what the application server thinks, whether they're started or not. And then we can go into custom MBean monitoring. So MBeans are the standard Java interface for performance counters, if you will. And we provide UI that lets you go in. If you've got an application, for example, in Java, maybe it's maintaining a queue and you want to, and it's got the queue size stored as an MBean. You could generate, you could go find that MBean in the UI, and then you could generate an alert if the queue size gets to be over 50 or whatever would constitute a problematic value for you. So this gives you a lot of flexibility to monitor Java applications that are running on your Linux or your Unix operating systems. You can see the grid here in terms of what we're supporting, both the application servers on Windows as well as Linux, and then some select combinations. Of course, WebLogic is an Oracle product, so we support that running on Solaris. WebSphere being an IBM product, we support that running on AIX. So we're now supporting all of the different Linux distros as well that were added back in the SP1 release that we did in January also. So this is foundation for making Java apps first-class citizens right alongside .NET applications. And so there's going to be, you'll see more information coming from Microsoft in the coming months here about additional monitoring capabilities that we're going to have for Java apps so that you get the same capabilities for monitoring Java apps that you do for .NET applications. All right, let me shift and do a quick demo here on the Operations Manager side. log in one more time, and now I typed it wrong. All right, that'll get us in. Let's take a look. We can see, just to follow up on that earlier deployment we did within Virtual Machine Manager, you can see that the TechEd demo VM is running, and we can see that that service that we deployed with the database and the web is running. And in fact, let's do the LNX web. Let's hit this website. That's the Dinner Now application. We've actually deployed that application. The web front end is responding to our web request, and it's actually talking to the database back end and retrieving some data. And so you can navigate around within the Dinner Now application that we have deployed onto a couple of virtual machines there. All right, let's go now and take a look at Operations Manager. The other thing you'll see is that we now have a couple of those new VMs are now visible in Operations Manager. So the Linux DB and the Web 002 are now visible in Operations Manager. I had a couple of other Linux machines already running in here. And let's take a look at this guy in the Health Explorer. It's interesting. He's got an alert visible here. And you can see that he's actually fussing about the physical disk average seconds per transfer. The actual transfer time on physical disk IOs on that Linux VM seems to be running a little slow. And that's because I'm running on a hypervisor and was generating some load there. And you can see how that alert rolls up into the performance of the operating system and up into the overall entity health. Let's expand this. We'll look at some of the things that we can see availability on. Operating system availability. You can see here we're monitoring individual processes, the crond process, klogd, sshd, syslog, udev, etc. All of those processes are healthy. You can see that we're monitoring some of the WSMAN stuff to make sure that we can communicate with it. If we go down into other performance information, look at the operating system performance, we can roll up and see we're monitoring the available megabytes of memory, the amount of swap space, some of the operating system performance, percent DPC time, percent interrupt time. If those numbers get really big, something's probably going wrong on your Linux operating system, and so we can generate alerts if those values exceed. So this is you get a good quick overview of the kinds of performance and health the health information in particular that we're monitoring out of the box with the management packs. And if you shift over to AIX, for example, or Solaris, some of those processes will be a little bit different. There's no UDEV process there, but we've customized the management pack so that we're monitoring the correct operating system processes based on whatever the operating system is. Let's look now at some of the performance information that we're collecting. You can see some of the reports that are here that are built in, processor performance. These are graphed just like they would be for any of the data coming from a Windows machine, physical disk performance. I think we're going to see some spikes there. We saw some spikes where it was getting slow. That's what generated the alerts. We can see memory utilization. So a number of different capabilities here. Good, the memory utilization is kind of flat. All this standard stuff, just lots of different values that we're collecting out of the box as part of the Linux and Unix operating system management. Let's go now to authoring and take a look at doing a little customization. I'm going to do a process monitor, and I'm going to add a new process monitor. There's already one there for the Apache daemon. Let's add a process monitor for MySQL. Oops, I am scrolling off here. Add monitoring wizard, click the next button. We'll give this a name, MySQL daemon. Whoops. We're going to put this in the MySQL DB management pack. What process do we want to monitor? We can actually go out and browse, look for a particular Linux machine, and look at the processes that are running on that machine just to help make sure we get the name right. And, yep, there's MySQL D. We'll pick that. You can type it in as well if you want to. And we get the full command line here. One of the problems that can happen is if you have Java processes, they all have the same name. They're all called Java. We can now filter based on the arguments to the process so that you can pick the one that you want to. Now, I've only got one MySQL D here, so I'm not going to pick one. We're going to generate an alert if that process goes away. and we click create, and we have created a monitor for the MySQL D process. There we go. Save that away, and that'll be added to the process list there. Now, the other thing I want to do, we'll do one more demo here, is I'm going to create a shell command line monitor. Still loading. There we go. Create a new monitor, a new unit monitor. Did I get it? No, I didn't get it. There we go. And we've got the capability now in the scripting area to do a Unix shell command. And I'll do a two-state monitor. Again, I'm going to pick the MySQL DB here. Give this MySQL. We're going to do a synthetic transaction against the MySQL database to see if it's really up and running. And I'm going to pick that SQL monitor that we had before, the MySQL daemon, to target. It's an availability monitor. We're going to do this every 5 minutes instead of every 15 minutes. Now, here's where the fun comes in. What am I going to go run? And I've got a command line here that I have previously put together. Let's go over to the Linux box and run that command line. And I think I've got it here. This is going to call MySQL. It's going to dump out some status information. And we're going to grep for the word error in that status information. And then we're going to do a word count, or a line count, WC-L. And so if I find the word error, I'm going to get a line count of 1 or more. If I don't find the word error, I'm going to get a line count of 0. So typical Linux admin kind of a thing to sort of figure out what's going on. And I get a very simple value, numeric value back to tell me the health of that. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this command line and I'm going to paste it into the monitor that I'm creating over here within the Ops Manager console. Click Next. And then I can define what the output means. So if the output is not equal to 0, this is the error expression. So not equal to 0 is an error from standard out. And here's the healthy expression. If it is equal to 0, then I'm healthy. And we're going to treat healthy as critical. And then finally, I can define an alert if I want to. Generate an alert, and then hit create. So, that simple. 4 or 5 minutes in the Op Console UI, I can run the arbitrary shell command line, compute arbitrary health, do anything I want to out on that Linux or that Unix box, and bring back the health there. So, great deal of flexibility, and it plugs in with what your Linux and Unix admin is used to doing or seeing. All right, I'm going to flip back now. Just do a couple of more slides and kind of wrap this up. Let's talk about Data Protection Manager, just real quickly what we've done there. So new in 2012 R2, online backups. So previously, if you wanted to back up a Linux VM running on Hyper-V, you had to suspend or stop the VM in order to do that backup. There was no way to do it online. What we've implemented is file system consistent backups. On the Windows side, you have VSS that allows you to force the applications in that VMM to get their data consistent. No such thing as VSS on the Linux and Unix side. So what we've done is made sure that the file system buffers will get flushed before the snapshot is taken. And we've put drivers into the Linux OS as part of the Linux integration services. To make that happen, we've introduced an API into Hyper-V to allow that to be called, and now we've enhanced DPM to make sure that that API is called to flush those buffers before the snapshot is taken. So this corresponds to the application consistent backups on the Windows side. And frankly, Linux applications typically, they're very file system based anyway. So doing file system consistent backups probably gets you about 80 or 90% of your consistency problems anyway. So new capability. We had a number of customers asking for this, and we're pleased to be able to extend our Linux and Unix support to support this. So I don't have a demo of that today. So that wraps things up here in terms of what we're doing in the Linux and Unix support. This is a great capability. We really want customers to understand that the private cloud that Microsoft is offering is not just limited to Windows. We've got the Linux capabilities there. We've got the Unix capabilities in your traditional and virtualized worlds. We can manage the heterogeneous data center. And this is strong. It's expanding support. This is not two guys in a corner somewhere just working on an unimportant project. We've got top-level Microsoft exec commitment that it's important for Microsoft's business that we be able to sell into customers, that we be able to manage that heterogeneous data center, because that's the reality of what's out there in the world. And we're acknowledging that reality, and we're putting our development resources and our product innovation behind that reality. So thank you very much. Related content, there's a couple of other breakout sessions. There's one with more detail on Config Manager. And on the Azure side, I didn't talk about that here today, but there is Linux capabilities, of course, in Azure, and I encourage you to take advantage of that. We've got some hands-on labs. You can go into the lab down here and play with Linux and Unix, or Linux in particular. We didn't bring the Unixes here. Play with Linux in the different components of System Center. So I'll be going from here down to the Solutions Expo. I'll be in the demo booth. I'll be there tomorrow. I'll be at Ask the Experts. And then I'll be hanging around here for a few minutes here this evening before I need to go downstairs and wrap up with any questions that you guys may have. So thank you very much. Appreciate your listening. And I will take questions at this point. Thank you. So any questions? Yeah, and people obviously who want to leave, go get with the Solution Expo, you can do that too. Okay, the new backup capability does not depend upon what Linux file system is in use. We're effectively backing up the entire virtual machine, including all of the VHDs, at the VHD level rather than at the file system level. That's correct. And that's the same thing that happens on the Windows side. When you back up a Windows VM running on Hyper-V using DPM, you're backing up the entire VHD. Other questions? Yes. So let's see, between OpenPegasus and OMI or between WMI on the Windows side? Okay, so on the Windows side, you know, WMI has been around a long time. There's probably 100 or more classes that have been implemented on WMI. What we've done is we've implemented equivalent classes for about a dozen, 12 or 15 most important ones. You saw the demo here in the UI. You can see those classes around the physical hardware. The difference there, I'm not sure what problem you might be referring to. Okay, that's a good point. So on the Windows side, there's local policy. You can go, within WMI on the Windows machine. Smart people have figured out how to go change things in WMI and make things happen to the Config Manager client. We have not documented or implemented those sorts of things. So the client-side SDK, if you will, on the Windows side does not exist on the Linux Unix side at this point. So we'd love to have feedback on things people want to do. You did see me do a command line. There's a couple of things like run policy that we have implemented a command line tool for that gives you the equivalent of a couple of the things that are on the Windows side, but most of the things on the Windows side are not there. So on the DPM point, that's a good point. We do not have file level restore in DPM for Linux VMs. I should have put that on my slide, but that's a good point. Something that we need to work on, that's where the file system issue comes into play. So I can back up the entire VM, back up the VHDs, but if I'm going to do file level restore, I have to understand that file system, and I don't have a way to do that from a Windows machine at this point. Yes? Or let me get somebody else over here. I'll be happy to stand around however long. Yes. And in fact, the ones I was demoing here today, I think the ones I was demoing today, there was actually a run once command line to install the Config Manager client, but you can actually bake it into a Linux VM, and it's okay with that. Yes?
There's no unique
There's no unique, it'll generate the unique ID when it boots up the first time. I'm fairly certain that it will. When it registers with Config Manager for the first time, there's a protocol that goes back and forth, and it'll generate a unique ID there. Yes?
Capabilities, but with Linux integration?
Yeah, are there any plans for server appv capabilities? No. We think of server appv is solving what's mostly a Windows unique problem with the registry. Linux and Unix applications already are usually pretty happy with side-by-side installs because they keep all of their data sort of within one file system subtree. And so we just don't see any particular problem to be solved there. Now, you could tell us otherwise, but that's our current thinking. Yeah?
So we saw in the demo how easy it is to create a monitor with a shell scripting.
Yes.
Can we create with the same init performance collection rules and, for example, for return some kind of value, which needs some kind of performance?
Yes. So I created a monitor here to return health, which was, you know, binary 0 or 1. You could also create a performance collection rule where the shell script returned a numeric value. That numeric value would go into the Ops Manager database. It would be collected every minute, every 5 minutes. And once it's in the Ops Manager database, it works just like any other performance collection. And so you collect a stream of performance data, and you can graph it, map it, do whatever you want to with it. Yes? Yes? So, yes, it is. It's limited to Linux running on Hyper-V. We have put a particular hook into Hyper-V in order to support the flushing of the file system buffers. And so that's what the focus is on Linux on Hyper-V, correct? Yeah. I don't think so. I mean, I think you get a Red Hat 6.4, for example, it's load and go. Good. Yeah, I think that's the case. Now, somebody could tell me otherwise, and we may need to go chase something down. You know, we do work directly with the top distro vendors to try to make sure this stuff, you know, we have a phone call with Red Hat every couple of weeks. And so, if somebody points out a problem, I'd love to hear about it because we can work with the distro vendors to get some of this stuff cleaned up because we want it to be load and go. You'd have to do some customization to make that happen. So again, there's no VSS equivalent, and so you'd have to do that yourself. Any other questions? Yes. Right. Good question. So Config Manager is not aware in any way, shape, or form of those dependencies. So as the IT admin, when you create your package and you create the program, which is the command line to install that package, and I'm using that package as a Config Manager term, you know, you may have to take multiple RPMs. You may have to write a shell script that would install them in certain order. We've not tried to go figure out those dependencies and do that for you automatically. As the IT admin, you need to assemble the correct set of, you know, RPM packages and a shell script that will do the right thing for whatever you've got there. So that is an exercise for the IT admin. Any other questions? Thanks very much. And I'll be hanging around if other folks want to talk about other things later.